We are moving on to first base as we continue our 2016 position previews. This is the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. I am Adam Azer, and I am pumped up. And I'm here with Scott White, and I know Heath Cummings is on his second cup of coffee, so he's pumped up too.
I'm just excited. My first ever position preview.
Yes, now as you were explaining off the air, this is your first one, you know, that you're doing on the air, but you've actually listened to position previews before from us.
I listened to every single one that you guys did last year because I was making a 24-hour drive, my official move down to Florida, and I listened to podcasts most of the way down here.
Did they help you?
Oh, well, I won all the one league that I played in last year, so I guess so. That was probably my key to success.
There you go. And Scott, I will tell you that yesterday we did the catcher preview, and I put it to good use in the mock draft we did yesterday. I waited, and I waited until, like, the 17th round, and you waited even longer to grab a catcher. So hopefully we can do the same thing.
Yeah, my second to last pick, JT Realmuto. So.
Yeah, there you go. You got your break.
So, one catcher leagues. Wait.
Now you can hear
good value.
You can hear the sexiness in Scott's voice.
Oh yeah,
he is battling a cold right now. So we appreciate your.
No, this is one people are going to re-listen to all preseason. People like Keith making cross-country drives.
Yeah,
and they're going to think this is what I normally sound like, but they're wrong.
Yeah, they are.
The thing I found the most interesting about our mock yesterday. Head-to-head categories, and I think we generally lean towards our roto rankings in head-to-head categories.
Yeah.
But the problem with that is, in our roto rankings, we've got catchers and a lot more catchers ranked than you need to draft.
Because this was a one-catcher league.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all of our roto leagues are two-catcher leagues.
Right, right, right.
And then we're used to having middle infielders and five outfielders, and so... It really, there's kind of a way to exploit those roto rankings if you go into it looking at it the right way, I think.
Well, Heath, you and I are going to do a mailbag show on Friday. We can talk about that mock draft.
Okay.
My favorite team that I've drafted so far. I was very happy with the way it turned out. And
Good. Part
of that is because of my first base strategy. So let's get into that. But if you wouldn't mind, guys, I would like to actually ask one catcher follow-up question just to put catcher to bed. To end the position preview, we did not talk about John Jaso, but he is a first baseman for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Does he factor into your catcher rankings?
Well, actually, Adam, he's DH only.
That's what I figured. You know, I was like, he must be DH only. So forget John Jaso.
No, if he's not a catcher, that sounds like NL only material to me.
And you're not going to sing.
What'd you say?
Every time I've ever heard John Jaso's name referenced, you sing the song.
Well, first, you don't want to hear me sing with this voice, trust me. And second of all...
I think this is the time.
Whenever somebody just said, like, out of nowhere, just, John Jaso, where do you think that's going? John Jaso jingle. Like, that's...
There it is.
That's what I always hear when somebody begins
a
sentence with John Jaso. Like, oh, they're about to burst into song, and they don't. It's a letdown.
Yeah. Well, since I made an ass of myself for thinking he might be catcher eligible, at least we got to hear Sexy Scott singing John Jaso, Jingleheimer Schmidt. That puts an end to catcher. So if we move to first base, there are two things I wanted to say. Heath, you and I talked about the riskiness involving Miguel Cabrera.
Right.
Scott and Al were more bullish on drafting Miguel Cabrera in the first round or midway through the first round.
Mm-hmm.
I think I might be changing my mind and joining Team Scott and Al.
Okay.
I was thinking about it yesterday. He is so good.
He's amazing.
Yeah, that I just don't know that I could let the injury risk drag him down in my mind too much. So I might be changing my mind on Miguel Cabrera.
You don't think that there's any chance that we're done with 40 home run, 35 home run Miguel Cabrera?
No, not if he stays healthy. I think he's proven that he's still the best pure hitter in baseball.
Yeah, he doesn't need to hit that many home runs to be a first rounder.
Okay.
I mean, on a per game basis, just with last year's power total, he was right there with Joey Votto, who, you know, more like a second rounder, but an early second rounder. And
right.
And obviously there's the potential that Cabrera is even better than that.
Yeah, because Heath, you have Cabrera sixth in your first base ranking in points.
Let's just say fifth. Because I've got Buster Posey ahead of him just because he plays catcher.
Okay.
And I don't, I mean, I don't think Buster Posey's going to be better than Miguel Cabrera. So let's say fifth.
Okay. Fifth it is. And Scott has him second behind Paul Goldschmidt. So there is a difference there. It's just injury for you, Heath, with Miguel?
It's injury, and I don't expect him to be in the top three at the position, maybe four or five at the position in home runs. I do think he's taken a hit to his power. I think Joey Votto is a fine comp for what you're expecting from Miguel Cabrera if he stays healthy.
Okay. So that was me calling out Heath a little bit. Now I'm going to call out Scott.
Okay.
All right, Mr. Sick. How can you possibly rank Buster Posey ahead of Edwin Encarnacion in Roto and only one spot behind Edwin Encarnacion with a very similar dollar value in points leagues? Edwin Encarnacion is so much better than Buster Posey, catcher eligibility or not.
Well, we talked about it on the Catcher podcast, just how far and away, how much better Posey is than the rest of the catcher crop. And yeah, I mean, even if all positions being equal, Encarnacion is more productive, I'll give you that.
Much more productive.
But all positions aren't equal, so.
Here's the point where, and I've gone, like, I actually went to Scott, I think it was last week, and asked him how he'd handled this in the past. Because I don't like the fact in my first baseman rankings that I've got Posey ranked ahead of some of the guys I have him ranked ahead of. If I was just ranking it on production, I'd probably have him ninth, eighth or ninth.
Right. So eligibility is a big part of your Buster Posey ranking for both of you.
What screws it all up is auction values. Because I have to put his auction value higher than some of those guys, and it looks kind of silly in the rankings if I have him ranked below them with a higher auction value.
Well, that's, I guess, the kind of point I'm trying to make. Like, in the second round, if I'm going to be drafting a player, whether it's Edwin Encarnacion or Buster Posey, regardless of position, I really want a guy who's going to hit 30 home runs and drive in 100, you know? Like, I want an excellent, excellent hitter there. And
I just had a thought.
Yeah.
And it's the first time I've thought of this. Because we like Posey a lot more because catcher is so much worse. If you take Posey in the second round, you're going to get a lot worse first baseman.
Yeah.
You're missing out on that entire tier of first baseman.
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily. You could get Chris Davis. You could get Jose Abreu on the bounce back.
Only if it's
you could be the guy taking Posey because you took Goldschmidt in round one, the way the picks line up, too.
But let's just assume for a second you didn't take Goldschmidt in round one.
Yeah.
And you choose Posey. Is the difference between Posey and Schwarber greater than the difference between Encarnacion and Adrian Gonzalez?
I think it depends on the format. In Roto, no. And Adam, I think you said it. I have Encarnacion ahead of Posey in points leagues, but he's kind of a points league specialist because his plate discipline's so good. He is a batting average liability, though, kind of like Jose Bautista. And so he doesn't stand out as much in that format. And I think the gap between him and somebody like Adrian Gonzalez is mostly just in the home runs. And that's not as many ways as Posey stands out from Schwarber.
Did he not have a considerable edge in RBIs as well?
Yeah, well, he had 111 last year. I would disagree. I don't think the batting average is that big of a deal because Edwin Encarnacion is a top 10 overall hitter in Roto over the last 3 years. And he was better than Joey Votto in Rotisserie last year. So, you know.
Last year, he had 94 runs and 111 RBIs. I think that's.
You know, I feel like a lot of hitters had amazing years last year, at least in terms of home runs. And the Blue Jays, just in general, I don't think their offense is going to have one of the greatest seasons ever. But all right, we're getting a little sidetracked here.
Well, okay.
Something that Scott talked about and you talked about is who you could get if you pass up a first baseman in the second round. And I think this is what I've found to be the most important strategy involving first base is you have to figure out if you want a top first baseman, how many there are, and when they're going to be off the board. Basically, that means, you know, how early in round three are they going to be off the board? And do you want to make first base a priority in the first two rounds?
That's, we kind of alluded to it, but I think we kind of buried the lead at the position here, because that is the story of first base this year, where, you know, it's always been considered the deepest position in fantasy. And I'm not so sure it's not even now, but the way the depth is distributed this year, if you want a first baseman that can compete with the majority of the league's first baseman, you need to commit to it early, because it's so top heavy. All the elite or near elite first basemen, the last of that group being Jose Abreu and Chris Davis, they're all going to be gone midway through round three for sure. In a roto league, it may even be by the end of round two. So, you know, and then when you get beyond them, the fallback options are really Adrian Gonzalez, Eric Hosmer, and Freddie Freeman. And then beyond that, big time gambles or second rate production. So it's, I count up, you know, leaving Posey out of this, because obviously he's drafted as a starter, I count up 10 mixed league caliber first basemen, including that fallback trio of Gonzalez, Freeman, and Hosmer. And if you play in a 12-team league, that's every team is going to have a big advantage over you at a position where you normally expect big production. So you don't want to be one of those two teams who doesn't get one of the 10.
And see, I don't want to be one of the 5 teams that doesn't get one of the 7. Because I feel like there's a bigger gap between Chris Davis or Jose Abreu, whoever you have last there, and Adrian Gonzalez, and there is between Freddie Freeman, Eric Hosmer, or Albert Pujols.
Yeah, I agree with you, Heath.
Ideally, I don't know that the gap is bigger. I want to be one of the 7-2, but because you're talking about the first two rounds here, that potentially means reaching for a first, just to make sure you get one. You could be passing up AJ Pollock or Jose Altuve early in round two for Joey Votto or Edwin Encarnacion, and if it gets to that point, it's not worth it to me, because those players are going to be even more valuable than just keeping pace. Like, those players are going to give you a bigger advantage at those positions, and I think that's more worthwhile than just keeping pace with the competition at first base. But there's value to both.
All right, well, let's talk about the 7. It's in some order. I'll just look at Fantasy Pros average draft position, the 7 first basemen that are the highest drafted top seven first basemen, excluding Buster Posey. Goldschmidt, Rizzo, Miguel Cabrera, Jose Abreu, Edwin Encarnacion, Joey Votto, and Chris Davis. All 7 of those guys are coming off the board by the 33rd overall pick. So if you're in a 12-team league, that's almost the end of round 3. And these are roto ADP. I have not seen Chris Davis last quite that long in most of our drafts, but
that's because I'm in our next draft. We have one today, right?
Yeah, it's
AL only. Our next mixed draft, I'm going to make a rule where I don't take Chris Davis, just so we can see how far he falls if I don't take him.
Now, if you're comfortable with Chris Davis in round 3, maybe that means you don't have to take a first baseman in rounds 1 and 2. But if you want
but you can't count on getting him in round 3.
It is a risk, and he's kind of a volatile player. So yesterday I had, I don't know, the 8th pick or something like that, and I was thinking about taking Cabrera. I think Rizzo may have been available. Actually, I think Rizzo went 1 pick later to Heath.
Yeah, you took Correa, right?
No, I took McCutcheon.
McCutcheon, and I took Rizzo.
Because I figured I'm going to take a first baseman in the second round, and I'm fine with any of those first basemen. Like, I think I might have gotten Encarnacion. I don't remember. But my point is, you know, there's a group of first basemen. I was content with any of those top 7, and I knew I'd be able to get one in the second round, so I took McCutcheon in the first round. So I think we've made it clear that you might have to go early in the first 2 rounds if you want one of those elite first basemen. And if you don't, we'll talk about some of the fallback options.
My approach to it, rather than reaching for a first baseman just to make sure I get one of those 7, I'm not going to pass up a first baseman because he plays first base. I think that's really the difference between past years for me, where, you know, it may have been the appropriate time to take a first baseman, but I don't want to fill first base early. Let me target one of these weaker positions instead. And that's not the case anymore. If if I'm in the right spot to draft Avado or Encarnacion or Miguel Cabrera or whomever, I'm going to be just as happy to take him as I would a third baseman or second baseman or whatever else.
So, by the way, ADP for Fantasy Pros lists Prince Fielder as a first baseman. What is his status in CBS Sports Leagues?
He's DH only. I went and looked at last year, and if you forget what he did in April and just look for May the rest of the year, he played first base really sporadically.
Yeah.
If he played at that same pace that he did last year, it's going to take him to about game 83 to get first base eligibility. Now, something could happen. Moreland could get hurt, and he could get 5 games in 1 week.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But if everybody stays healthy and he plays it at the same pace he did for the last 5 months of last season, it's going to take him until around the All-Star break.
And if Prince Fielder were first base eligible, where would you guys rank him among first basemen?
I'd rank him at the top of that fallback trio of Gonzalez, Freeman, and Hosmer.
And I think I'd put him at the bottom of it.
Yeah, I think the difference is I have a little more hope of him regaining more power the second year back from that surgery.
Yeah.
Well, and not only that, I mean, just the power he showed last year, he was better in head-to-head points per game than all three of those guys last year. So I guess he doesn't even need to regain the power. But that is something, if I've gotten left out of that those top 10 first basemen, Fielder is drafting Fielder in the hopes that he gains first base eligibility sooner than not is something I've done. And it may work out, like he said. It would be interesting to check how early the Rangers play their fifth game in an NL park, because I would assume Fielder would start the majority of those games and Moreland would be left out of the lineup.
Yes, I think that's a good point. I will know that shortly.
So, yeah, that you can check that out about Prince Fielder, and that's obviously an interesting thing here. You might play in a league where he is first base eligible, so he factors in as a top 10 first baseman, certainly. Scott, I'm going to read an email. It's from Ben from the Metro DC area. And by the way, we're going to do a mailbag show, I think, on Friday. Heath and I will have this mailbag show for you, so send in your questions. Gotten some good ones so far. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. That's the letter I. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. The question is, who are the outfielders or infielders who are likely to gain first base eligibility early this season?
Just real quick, I did find the answer already, and it's July 16th. So that's not going to help.
Probably about that 83-game point you were mentioning earlier.
Yes. Yeah. Besides Prince Fielder, Miguel Sano is possible, right?
I think outfield would be more likely for him. They're talking about him playing left field.
Yeah.
But first base, you know, maybe. It seems like an easy enough transition. He came up as a third baseman. You know, David Ortiz is always a possibility, though, even less likely than Fielder. Other than that, and this is something, you know, I wish there were more options because there's a need. But there isn't somebody who's like, okay, well, he's not eligible at first base yet, but that's really what he's playing, so he's going to gain eligibility there. I do think, just as a general rule, that's the easiest position for any player to gain in season, because it's the easiest position to play out of position.
Oh, well, what about Hanley Ramirez?
Oh, shoot. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. Adam, this is actually the first time I've even considered that. Because I have not been enthusiastic about drafting Hanley Ramirez at all, but it seems like he could measure up to that Adrian Gonzalez class.
Yeah, I want to talk about Hanley Ramirez, because Dane Perry wrote about him and Sandoval potentially having bounce-back seasons in their second year with the Red Sox, and after this we'll kind of go through ADP and give some sleepers, breakouts, and busts. But Hanley Ramirez is going to start the season outfield eligible, but he is going to be their first baseman for Boston, so it won't take long. By week two, you'll have a first baseman. Ramirez was hitting .283 with a .340 on-base percentage and a .609 slugging percentage on May 4th. And then he hurt his shoulder running into the left field wall, which he won't be doing anymore. And then he was hitting .283 with a .330 on-base and a .482 slugging, much less impressive, but still not bad, on June 24th when he got hit by a line drive on his hand off the bat of Xander Bogaerts. And after that injury, Hanley Ramirez couldn't grip the bat the way he wanted to. He was terrible. He batted 193 the rest of the way. But it was really, you can trace it back to the shoulder injury May 4th. Obviously, we know he's injury prone, but Hanley Ramirez will be a first baseman. Do you guys see him potentially having a good season, being a really good fantasy option?
I think Chris Tower said it best when we were talking about him about a week and a half ago. And Scott's got him 29th amongst outfielders. I've got him 35th. Scott's even, or Al's lower on them. Both of us are. And Chris said he's the one guy that I think is not going to finish between 29th and 35th or 40th. He's either going to be a top 20 outfielder or he's going to be awful. And I think there's a wide range of possible outcomes with Hanley Ramirez.
Well, let's say, like, who would you rather take a chance on if you're stuck at first base, Lucas Duda or Hanley Ramirez?
Hanley. Wow. I'm sorry for my voice. That was a bad crack there.
That's all right. We know you're fighting.
He got a little bit emotional. Like, he just had this revelation of Hanley Ramirez first base eligible, and Scott's having a hard time dealing with the emotions of it all.
You know what makes it hard is I have a monotone voice, like, to begin with. So I try on these podcasts to make a concerted effort to vary my tone. And so that's impossible right now. It's just, I got to talk like this to keep it from cracking.
Well, we like voice cracking.
It's what's fun. That?
We like voice cracking. It's a comic relief.
Yeah.
Heath.
Now I forgot the question.
Yeah, no, you answered Hanley Ramirez over Lucas Duda. I'll throw the same one out there to Heath. Hanley or Lucas Duda?
Yeah, I think I'd rather have Hanley. That doesn't, there's still a pretty decent gap between Lucas Duda and what we consider a startable first baseman in a points league.
In a points league.
So, I'm not sure that Hanley's going to be the answer to filling out the top 12.
All right, Hanley Ramirez or Albert Pujols?
Now, Duda isn't as bad in a roto league, and I think the biggest difference is my big concern with Duda is him not playing much against lefties.
Oh, you know, he actually was better against lefties last year.
I know, but it was such an aberration. I still think he's a potential platoon victim.
I think Lucas Duda being so much better last year against lefties, the one thing that gives you is probably a guarantee that for the first 6 weeks of the season, he's going to play against lefties. But if he's as bad over those first 6 weeks as he's been the rest of his career against lefties, he's probably going to stop seeing them so much.
So how about this? Albert Pujols or Hanley Ramirez?
I'd rather go...
See, here's the thing.
I'd rather go Pujols.
Okay. Yeah, I actually feel like Pujols is falling too far in drafts because of the likelihood he misses a month recovering from foot surgery. But he really was... You know, in terms of head-to-head points per game, he was sandwiched between Chris Davis and Jose Abreu, so he was. It would be an 8 instead of a 7 if not for that foot surgery.
Well,
I think people are a little too afraid of him in terms of age and regression and all that, but it hasn't really been a steady regression like you normally attribute to a player who's you know, on the decline. It was a drop off 1 year and then basically steady production since then. And, you know, second rate Albert Pujols is still a very productive player.
I don't like foresee him just being slightly worse because he's 36 years old. I just think that 36 years old does increase the chances of him being awful.
Also, I don't like the fact that Pujols isn't going to have a normal offseason because he struggled in 2013 when he was coming off arthroscopic knee surgery. In the offseason. Then again, he had a decent 2014 when he had the torn plantar fascia before the season. But I don't know. I feel like he could have a bad year and then have the excuse, well, I didn't have a normal offseason, because it's been a problem in the past. And also, I feel like the last 2 years with Pujols, he's had a torrid stretch that sort of made his entire year. Like in 2014, it was his first 22 games. He was amazing. And the last 137, he really wasn't. And last year was a 47-game stretch where he was amazing, and in his other 110 games, he had an OPS under 700. And maybe I'm being a little too picky, but I just don't think he's that consistent.
I mean, those are valid points, and if we legitimately were drafting Albert Pujols alongside Chris Davis, I'd understand. But
Yeah.
The chance of getting Chris Davis like production in round 9 or later. I mean, you have to take that, right?
Okay, that's a fair point. So let's do some sleepers, breakouts, and busts. Give me your favorite sleeper first baseman, Heath Cummings.
I'm going to go really deep, a deep sleeper on this one, and I'm going to go with Chris Carter.
Oh,
going
the Brewers.
To Milwaukee, change of scenery, and it's a very positive change of scenery. And we were talking about this with the Chris Davis trade, how it was a downgrade in park, but maybe an upgrade in the lineup. The one thing I'll say about this Brewers lineup is if they don't make any more trades, the middle of the lineup is pretty solid. Like, you've got Ryan Braun, Jonathan LaCroix, Chris Carter. Chris Carter doesn't fit with those guys.
Chris Carter sucks, Heath.
No, Chris Carter doesn't
suck. He hits 200.
Well, where were we drafting Chris Carter last year, Adam? I mean, you have to.
I wasn't. I was never a part of that. Okay, so I remember it very well. In 2014, from July 4th on, Chris Carter was the best hitter in the history of Earth. And then, you know, and rightfully so, people thought maybe he was finally coming around and take a shot on him in 2015. I did not have him on any team. And in 2015, he hit 199 with 24 home runs. And guess what? In September, he batted 344 with 6 home runs and had a 969 slugging percentage, like a 1400 OPS almost. And I'm not going to be fooled by it again. That's the kind of hitter he is. He gets super hot, but overall,
he's 230 with a 320 on base and a 470 slug and give you 35 home runs.
Yeah, I mean, he hit 37 2 years ago. I'm not, like, I don't know that I would have picked him out as a sleeper like Heath did, but I understand where he's coming from. Like I was saying with Pujols, you have to consider the context of the numbers, because Carter's not even getting drafted in mixed leagues now, and he could be he could approach 40 home runs.
I will say, like, the approach Scott's taken with Prince Fielder and hoping that he gets first base eligibility, Carter could be a nice hedge.
Yeah.
In the very last round of the draft.
Or like a corner infield option?
Well, yeah, in Roto, sure.
Yeah.
I'll add that there's no way I would draft him in a head-to-head league. It would have to be Roto because of the streakiness Adam is referring to. And even in Roto, there's the issue of how, like, when he sucks, are you going to be able to stick with him? Because I had him in at least one league last year, and I couldn't. And, you know, I guess it turned out to be a good thing because he hit only 199. But what if he had that crazy 2 week stretch where he hit 10 home runs and I wasn't a part of it?
Yeah,
I would have wasted everything I paid for.
All right, so that's Chris Carter for Heath. Who's the sleeper for Scott?
Well, I was honestly going to say Albert Pujols here, but I'll go a little deeper. Are you going, Heath? Are you going to mention the one guy as your breakout that I suggested?
Yes.
Okay, so I won't say him.
Very nice.
I'm going to say CJ Cron, whose biggest problem since getting called up by the Angels in 2014 was that he couldn't get consistent at bats for some reason. Mike Socha wasn't willing to give them to him, even though he was productive from the get-go. I don't know if you've looked at the Angels lineup, projected lineup at this stage of the offseason.
Yeah, it's no good.
It is abysmal, especially since Pujols isn't a part of it right now. There's no way they're leaving Cron out of that lineup. And while I don't think I don't know that he has an upside to be an impact player in points leagues because he doesn't walk at all. He definitely hits for power. He had 10 home runs in 193 at-bats over the final 2 months last season. And I think, you know, comparing him to somebody like Carter, I think he has some potential in terms of batting average too, because he's actually on the lower end of strikeout rate. For a power hitter, he makes a lot of contact. So I think with consistent bats, we could see more consistency with the batting average too. So as a late round corner infielder in a Roto league, I think he could end up putting up numbers comparable to somebody like Lucas Duda, or, you know, maybe kind of like the middle ground between Lucas Duda and Kendrys Morales, because I think he's even a better batting average bet than Duda.
Would you rather take a chance on CJ Crone or Victor Martinez?
Depends on the format, because Victor Martinez has the plate discipline Crone lacks, and that in and of itself could carry him in points leagues if he's at all respectable at the plate.
All right, let's go to breakouts. Heath, who are we waiting on pins and needles for?
I don't know if you're waiting on pins and needles, but it's Ben Paulson.
Oh, right.
We've talked about him before. The main issue with Paulson is playing time. But I really can't imagine how many at-bats this team wants to give to Mark Reynolds. You said that Chris Carter sucks.
Yeah,
Mark Reynolds sucks.
He's worse than Chris Carter, yeah.
Yes, he's worse than... And Paulson, really, I mean, he's got 400 career plate appearances, 420, 15 home runs, 59 RBIs, a 284, 329, 479 slash line. You give the guy 550 plate appearances, and he's a pretty productive first baseman.
Yeah.
And he gets to play half his game at Coors. The nice thing about Paulson on leagues with deep benches is he's first base and outfield eligible. You could just play him when he's at home.
Do the Rockies have any hitters that are good against lefties, or are they all like platoon guys who are going to get better against righties?
That was supposed to be the purpose of Mark Reynolds. Like they thought he's better than he is against righties, against lefties, that he was good against lefties, I guess.
Well, he used to be, I think.
That was a hard sentence to follow.
All right, so Ben Paulson, we'll keep an eye on him. All right, guys, let's get a breakout from Scott.
Okay, so this guy isn't, we don't think of him as a first baseman, but he is eligible there. And actually, that is the position he's going to play primarily this season. And that's Will Myers, who I actually took as my primary first baseman in yesterday's draft because I got burned. I got left out of the top 10. And rather than, pay extra for somebody like Lucas Duda, I just waited and got Myers, who before going down with his second wrist injury in as many years last year, looked like he was on the verge of a breakout. And even with the not so great finish when he returned from that wrist injury and didn't seem 100%, he still, was right up there with like Justin Upton in head-to-head points per game. So, obviously, health is an issue for Will Myers, but I don't think performance is as much a question mark as a lot of people do. Obviously, his sophomore season wasn't great, but
it was awful.
It was plagued by a wrist injury as well. And this is a guy who, 3 years ago we were talking about, he wasn't quite as hyped as like a Chris Bryant, but he was the prospect everybody was looking at to make a big impact. And
right.
I don't think it's too late for him to do that. So
he hit 37 home runs in the minor leagues in 2012.
Yeah. Yeah. So with a late round pick, particularly at a position where there's going to be glaring need, I like that.
And like Paulson, he's got the outfield eligibility too. So in a roto league, you can kind of move him around. I think, is he old enough to qualify as a post hype sleeper?
Well, I don't even know that necessarily has to be an age thing. Yeah, we're past the hype at this point. For him to last as long as he does, I think that's post-hype.
There's plenty of reasons to be concerned if you're counting on Will Myers ever reaching the potential we thought he had 3 years ago. But if you're drafting him in the very late rounds, I think there's enough upside to make that worthwhile.
All right, well, we have named four guys who might not be drafted in shallower leagues, but still are interesting. Crone, Myers, Paulson, and Chris Carter. Just give me a one-word answer. Who's your favorite of those four? Crone, Myers, Paulson, Chris Carter.
Myers.
It's Carter.
That's a two-word answer, Heath. Come on now. All right, guys.
And if you count a contraction as like three words.
Yeah, it's true. That's true.
I don't follow rules very well.
Can I? Yeah. I just want to highlight one other first baseman here who I think is of the same vein. And it actually, like, Myers is dual eligible, and that's Mark Trumbo, whose stock has fallen mostly because of injuries the last 2 years. I used to think he was overrated, and he was. I mean, he was a top 10 round pick, but still a guy who, if you project his numbers out, you're talking 30 home runs. And in the 2 years where he's been injured, he's actually improved in some ways. He goes the other way more. He doesn't strike out as much. If he stays healthy with Baltimore, which has rejuvenated sluggers like Chris Davis and Nelson Cruz in the past, that's another late rounder who could end up making you not regret passing up the position early.
Good fallback options there. Certainly good corner infield options. How about a bust at first base, guys? Bust, Scott, you can go first.
Okay. Mark Teixeira, I guess, would be the main one. And I kind of feel like it's too obvious.
Yeah.
But I think based on the breakdown of first base, those two owners who get left out at the position, Teixeira is likely going to begin the season as the starter for one. And if it seems like it's a high probability that one of those owners could panic and take him sooner than he needs to. And
when would you take him?
I would probably take him where did he go yesterday? Because that was about the time, as someone who got left out at first base, that I was thinking about it.
This is also the fun part about the Fantasy Pros rankings, though. Like, we don't like Mark Teixeira as a starter.
Yeah.
And he's been a starter in the past, so we view him as a bust.
Right.
We are some of the highest in the industry on him.
Yeah, it's incredible. He is going, he's going after Brandon Belt, Lucas Duda, Kendrys Morales.
I think at the end of the 15th round is his average draft position.
Yeah, that seems a little late.
I mean, if that's where he goes in your draft, then great. But I see a high chance that won't be where he goes.
It's also worth noting that Teixeira, if you're just saying, when he's healthy, he's really good. He was better last year than he had been in a long time, had a career high.
That wasn't the story for him before last year. It was he gets hurt all the time and he's not very good anymore.
Well, I don't agree because I think he had been always hurt. And playing through it.
Yeah, I mean, that may have contributed to the struggles.
Yeah, he is good, but he had a 19.1 home run to fly ball percentage last year. That was by far his highest. So he's probably not as good, even if he's healthy, as what we saw last year. Heath, you're bust.
I guess I have to say Miguel Cabrera, right?
Sure.
There's only three first basemen with an average draft position in the top 13. So everybody's being taken in the second round or start of the third. I think Cabrera is the most likely of those top seven to get hurt first off or to underperform just based on he's counting heavily on having a high average,
which he does every single year of his career.
Yeah, it's a batting title for the last five.
So. Right.
if there's anyone you can count on for batting average, I think it's Miguel Cabrera.
See, I'm not sure this year it is.
Why?
There were a lot of things in his peripherals last year that looked like he shouldn't have had as high of average as he did last year. And those hadn't been the case in the past. In the past, he's won batting titles while also hitting the ball extremely hard with an extremely high line drive rate. And, 2 years ago, he had a 313 average.
Here's why I'm hesitant to dig into the... Well, I'm sorry. Did I interrupt you?
No.
Okay. I'm hesitant to dig into the numbers too much on Cabrera because he was a different player before the calf injury and after the calf injury.
He was a different player 2 years ago than he's been over the last 2 years.
When he was playing through an abdominal injury that he had surgery on in the offseason.
Right.
So I'm not sure we've seen completely healthy Cabrera since 2013, and yet he's still been awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure that we're likely to see completely healthy Cabrera again.
Okay.
All right, let's review ADP and talk about first those elite ones. Paul Goldschmidt, Anthony Rizzo, Miguel Cabrera, Jose Abreu is fourth, and this is rotisserie. Edwin Encarnacion is fifth, Joey Votto is sixth, and Chris Davis is seventh. And these guys are all going within the first 33 picks. These are first three-round guys, Goldschmidt, Rizzo, Cabrera, Abreu, Encarnacion, Votto, and Chris Davis. All right. Do we have to even say anything about Paul Goldschmidt? He's as steady as it gets, right?
Yes. In fact, I think there's a better case than many people are giving it that he could be the first overall pick.
Yeah.
Because of the steadiness and the fact he actually runs a little, unlike Harper and even Trout.
Encarnacion. I mean, you want to talk about an injury risk? You have to really consider him. He tends to miss some games. He played 146 games last year. he gets a little banged up, but very consistent. And then Rizzo, you know, I don't know if this is even worth talking about, but I think it is. He led baseball. He was hit by a pitch 30 times last year. It was by far the most in baseball. It does scare me a little bit with Rizzo, who, by the way, had 17 steals last year. Very, very impressive. I have I love Rizzo.
Nine came in April.
What'd you say?
I think nine of those steals came in April. So,
oh, yeah. That's good to know. I love Rizzo, and I have no fear at all, except for the hit by pitch thing. Like, I kind of feel like that makes him somewhat risky. And anybody care about that?
I think you should. And it's not something I've given a lot of credit to. But the main reason I think he qualifies as a first rounder is because of safety. I mean, he's not a great help in batting average. There are better power hitters out there. He's good enough to be a first rounder, but he's not an exciting one. He's just a safe one. And maybe he's not so safe.
I will take the guy that's had over 600 plate appearances each of the last 3 years and 690 in two of those three.
Yeah.
The greatest predictor of injury is recent past injury.
Yes, but a guy who got hit 30 times by a pitch last year and 15 times the year before, which ranked him sixth in baseball, he crowds the plate. He gets hit a lot. It's just something to consider. All right, how about Joey Votto and Jose Abreu? Do you feel confident in these guys? Because there has been some fluctuation in their performance. Abreu has only been in the league 2 years, but Abreu and Votto, do you feel confident in them?
I mean, the biggest concern for Votto is the fact that the team he plays for is going to be so awful. The lineup he's in is going to be so awful. I still feel better about him, I think, than I do Abreu. I feel more confident that we know exactly what he's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel the same way, too. But part of me feels like we're just glossing over the fact he was going in the fifth round last year. That's how much his stock had fallen.
Right.
So to say, oh, we know exactly who he is. I feel like last year was true Votto.
Right.
And the previous 2 years was injury plagued, you know, ill-timed streaks Votto. So I agree. I mean, Abreu might actually be a little overrated in points leagues because his plate discipline's so bad. But at the same time,
and 2 years ago, it's not like Votto was bad, and he played 162 games. He had a 825 OPS,
but he hit like 24 home runs, I think.
Right, yeah. Which not great for a first baseman.
And even last year, it was what
29. Mm-hmm.
That's a noteworthy difference.
He also had only 80 RBI last year, which is crazy.
That's kind of what Heath was saying with the lineup, right?
Yeah. He's not going to have 100 RBI.
Okay. So we move down and we'll look at those fallback options. Adrian Gonzalez, they're going in this order.
Wait a second. We skipped Chris Davis.
We did skip Chris Davis. Yes. I'm sorry. We're already at 45 minutes. So let's see what we can do in the next 10 minutes here, try to knock out the rest of this position. But, Davis going, mid third round. He's really been going like late second, early third in our mocks. But mid-third in...
I don't know if he's made it to the third yet, largely because of me.
Because of you.
So you have no issues.
I picked Teixeira as my bust, but Chris Davis was, like, if you'd let me pick two busts, he would have been the other one.
What scares you about Chris Davis?
2014.
Right, but that was largely because of a suspension, and which we don't have to worry about anymore.
No, I mean, he had... less than 200, right? It wasn't just a suspension.
Yes, he hit less than 200 with a 244 BABIP.
Yeah.
And he's the only player I've been able to find with a line drive rate over the last 5 or 6 years, with a line drive rate over 24%, which hitting a lot of line drives generally leads to a high BABIP.
Yeah.
That had a BABIP below 260. His other years in the league, 2012, he had a 335 BABIP. 2013, he had a 336. 2015, he had 319. So it's 70 to 80 points below what he's done for his career.
Right, but...
and he hit the ball hard and hit line drives. It was just really unlucky.
But it still happened. You can't run. You can't hide from it.
Right.
It happened.
It did.
And it was...
unlucky. terrible.
It ruined people, and I don't want to be ruined. And I think a guy, anybody who strikes out 200 times a year has the potential to just completely pull the rug out from you under you like that. Now, I mean, because first base break shapes up the way it does, and because, you know, 40 home run guys are not exactly in ready supply, there gets a point where the risk is worth, where the reward is worth the risk, but is round two it? Not for me.
Yeah. I mean, the reason I'm so bullish on Davis is I expect him to lead all first basemen in home runs and RBIs. And if he does both of those things, he doesn't have to have that great of an average.
Okay. But what would you, like, you expect him to put a percentage on it? How likely is he to do that?
More likely than anyone else.
Give me a number.
What? This is a completely off the cuff number, but 20%.
Well, that doesn't sound very confident,
though. Well, there's 30 first basemen.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody else is going to be above 10%.
But you're drafting him the second round based on this 20% confidence.
No, because if he's not, then there's probably a 60% chance he's in the top two or three.
Okay.
Well, even with that 2014 that was extremely fluky, he has more home runs by far than anyone else over the last 3 years.
I will also say that you should just be aware with Chris Davis, he is a lot better in rotisserie than he is in points because he strikes out so much. If you play in a league where it's one full point for a strikeout, that really downgrades him. Our standard scoring is half a point for a strikeout. He was the fifth best first baseman in that format last year. He was the second best first baseman in rotisserie last year. So keep that in mind. All right, let's go on to the Freeman, Gonzalez, Hosmer group. They're being drafted in the sixth and seventh rounds on average. Adrian Gonzalez, Freddie Freeman, Eric Hosmer. That's the order it's going on Fantasy Pros. Who's your favorite in that group, guys? Gonzalez, Freeman, Hosmer. Heath, who's your favorite?
I have Gonzalez the highest of the three of them. I don't have a lot of separation between the three of them, though.
Scott, who's your favorite?
I agree with what Heath said, all the way to the not having much separation.
Actually, I have more separation than Scott does, it looks like.
Well, okay. I didn't know it was a competition.
No, it's not. I mean, I'm just saying, like I said, probably what Scott should have said. I've got Gonzalez separated between Hosmer and Freeman, and Hosmer and Freeman basically is the same thing.
I'd have really, like, very... I don't know why. I just have no interest in Gonzalez. I don't really want to get him. The best thing you can say about him is he's played 156 games, 156 or more games, 10 straight seasons. That's amazing. Adrian Gonzalez stays healthy. He does drive in a lot of runs. He usually hits very well with runners in scoring position. Batted 296 with runners in scoring position last year. He's usually around 320 or 330. But this is a guy who had 9 home runs in his first 26 games and was pretty below average.
That's not the first time we've seen that from him.
Nah, and I don't know. Freeman had more power last year, guys. He had 18 home runs in 118 games. The year before, he had 18 home runs in nearly a full season.
Right. I think the only real, we have a pretty good idea what Freeman is. The only problem is he's maybe playing in the worst offense in baseball.
Yeah. Now, I want to point out Freeman, great OBP, so maybe better in on-base percentage leagues. And then Hosmer. You say we know what Freeman is. Do we pretty much know what Hosmer is? Like 18 home runs?
The weird thing about Hosmer is pretty much all the projection systems expect him to regress and get worse next year.
Yeah?
Well, I don't know that you can blame them because he's been... And I know this is not how projection systems work, but they're probably taking 3-year average into account. And that takes into account the fact that he's been on and off. He's had this on and off pattern throughout his career. Yeah. Where every year we think, okay, he's broken through and I can trust him to be a good fantasy option. He follows it up with this stinker.
Yeah.
Now, I don't really think there's anything to a pattern like that, but just the general inconsistency is reason enough to rank Hosmer third of that group.
I think he's going to be 280, 290 with a 340 OPS and a 440 slug.
OBP, not OPS.
Yes.
Yeah, Eric Hosmer is the opposite of the San Francisco Giants. He sucks in odd years. So Freeman, Hosmer, more likely to have a breakout, even if you don't think it's likely. Who is more likely to have a breakout, Freeman or Hosmer?
I guess I'd have to say Hosmer, just because he could have a breakout based on runs and RBIs if he just hit a few more home runs.
Okay.
He's in a much better offense. It's going to be really hard, I think, for Freddie Freeman to have a breakout when how is he going to drive in more than 85 runs?
You know, I'm going to say Freeman just because he had kind of this divided season by injury, kind of like Cabrera. And like Cabrera, what was it, a neck injury, I think it was? He looked like he was having a breakout before it happened.
Okay, let's continue further down in the ADP, and now we're looking. You know, we're getting outside the top 10 because Pujols, and then in our drafts, Teixeira will come off the board. We talked about those guys, but now we're looking at Kendrys Morales, Brandon Belt, Lucas Duda, Teixeira.
And Morales is not first base eligible.
Oh, okay, yeah. So Fantasy Pros has him there, but. So we'll eliminate Morales. He's only DH.
Yeah.
All right. So
I don't imagine that changing.
Brandon Belt, Lucas Duda, Mark Trumbo, Carlos Santana, and how about Byung-ho Park?
Oh yes, we have to talk about him, huh?
And Ryan Zimmerman is also here. Who do you guys want to target past the Pujols to share a group?
I just don't ever get here.
Well, corner infield. Now we're looking at corner infield.
This is Scott's territory. He's been living in this range.
Well, I don't like to, but I have had to. And actually, I rank Park alongside Pujols and Teixeira because I think they all have a lot of risk and a lot of reward. Park was a 50 homer guy the last 2 years in South Korea now. What does that mean?
He strikes out more than anybody in the league, too.
Well, I'm getting there. Just let me build it up the way I need to. What does it mean that he hit 50 home runs the last 2 years? Where Jung-ho Kang was a 40-homer guy the year before he came to Pittsburgh, and that's really the only basis for comparison we have. And while he certainly wasn't a 40-homer guy in the majors, he was pretty powerful. Shortstop, and that power began to show even more as the season went on. So I think Park could maybe approach 30 home runs, but like he said, the strikeouts, he struck out a third of the time against their pitchers. Against major league pitchers, what's that going to mean for
their
him?
Their pitchers.
Well, I don't think the standard of pitching is the same.
No, I know.
I think that's a safe assumption.
You are right. Yes. Okay. So, but you would take him over, let's say, Lucas Duda, who, you know, it's kind of strange because he had a pretty similar year, Lucas Duda, in 2015 compared to 2014. If you just look at the slash lines, he only hit three fewer home runs. He had less RBI and he played fewer games. But the years were pretty similar for Duda, and we were very excited about him. Fairly excited about him going into 2015, not so much now. So just want to throw that out there.
He's fine. He's just clearly second-rate production at the position, so hard to get excited about him.
In a points league, do you think as bad as Carlos Santana was last year, about a .231, only hit 19 home runs, which was down from, I think, 27 the year before.
Right.
He was actually the number 11 first baseman in points leagues. He had 108.
I've actually got him 12th
in points
in my rankings.
Where do you have him in Roto?
I don't know. Lower.
Okay. I'll tell you where you have him.
The player with the biggest difference in value between those formats.
Yeah. Of any position, you mean?
Maybe. I mean, you could argue Billy Hamilton, I guess, but. Mm-hmm. You know, stolen bases are pretty valuable in points leagues, too. So I really think Santana, since walks are such a big part of the package, and since he's going to kill you in batting average, even in a good year, there's a big discrepancy there between the formats.
See, he's going to kill you in batting average even in a good year. The 2 years before that, he'd been 252 and 268. What's league average now, 265?
Well, I don't think you can... You said league average is fantasy average.
Well,
it's not the same thing.
If you're league average,
he's pulling
average,
down
though,
your team's batting.
Right. He's not killing you.
Well, he may be killing it. Well, is it 230 the last 2 years or two of the last three or something?
Two straight years batting 231.
I think it's fair to say he's a batting average drain 2 years of 230.
Yeah. And that made him the number 14 first. But like, okay, because Santana, just to wrap this up, good in points leagues. You can use him as your starter probably, even if he hits 231. But in 2014, he had 27 home runs. In 2015, he had 19 home runs. He had the same amount of RBI. But still, with a 27 home run, 85 RBI season in 2014, because of the batting average, he only was the number 14 first baseman in Roto. So big difference there, as Scott mentioned. And then you got Brandon Belt. You got Ryan Zimmerman. You know, are these just guys? Like, they're just corner infield?
They're a definition of just guys.
Yeah. All right, I think we covered first base, fellas, because after that we get to all the sleepers that you guys have.
Oh, prospect.
Okay.
Prospect?
Sure.
Watch A.J. Reed very closely this spring. He could beat out John Singleton for the job, and even if he doesn't do that, he could come up the first half of the year. Monster numbers in the minors, like Paul Goldschmidt-level numbers in the minors, and somebody who I think this time next year we could be talking about as a top 12 option at the position.
Wonderful. Heath, good job on your position preview debut.
Thank you.
Scott, I appreciate you waking up early and coming in and doing this because I know you're sick. That's good stuff, man.
Well, I hope the listeners appreciate it and don't curse me for having to subject them to this voice for an hour.
They could do both.
Good information is more important than your voice, which is super sexy anyway, and we love it.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Same to you, pal.
You know, I should ask this earlier in the podcast, but I'm just going to ask this now. What did you think of Breaking Bad, which you binge-watched over the winter?
I liked it.
Wow. Okay, wait a second.
No, I liked it. I enjoyed it. I'm glad I watched it. It wasn't... I don't know. It's hard when you get into anything that people have declared the best of whatever ever.
Yeah.
You know, you're watching it with that expectation, and there are shows I've liked better than Breaking Bad, so I can't say it totally met that expectation, but it was really good. You know, I don't want to knock it either.
The only show I liked better than Breaking Bad was The Shield. What show did you like better than Breaking Bad?
Probably wasn't The Shield.
My two favorite shows of all time are Lost and The Walking Dead. And
okay.
So they're both. I may put Fringe ahead of.
Oh yeah, you love Fringe.
Well, I mean, you know, part of the problem with Fringe versus something like Breaking Bad is Fringe wasn't totally serialized. It had these standalone episodes that kind of slowed down the main storyline. But
I will say that in the middle of Lost, I was right there with you.
It did not end well.
And I think it fell behind Breaking Bad for me just because of how terrible the ending was.
I can understand that perspective, but for me, the high points of Lost were just so high. I don't think any TV show is ever going to approach that.
Well, guys, that'll conclude First Base and television talk. Mailbag show on Friday, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. See you later.